Welcome to the wake-up call as we're sitting here desperately pushing buttons trying to get things to work. It is Sunday morning, November 22nd. It's 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. This is the Sunday morning wake-up call. Sean McCord, not knowing what I'm doing, hosting this morning and speaking with Bob Chapel. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Bob is the, he's a longtime professor of drama, former chair of the Department of Drama at UVA. You've been the head of Heritage, and now you're rounding third base.
Riding into the sunset.
Well, I was going to say sliding home. I think we're over-modulating a bit here. You are on the eve of your retirement. Mm-hmm. Coming up this next semester is going to be your last semester at UVA. And you're working on your last show. So let's get that out front. Let's talk about what you're doing right now. Because today is at 2 p.m. is the matinee of Our Town, which is the last show that you're directing at UVA as
officially.
as UVA faculty.
Officially. Maybe, hopefully, down the line, they'll ask me to come back and direct a show or two.
Well, yeah. I mean, in your career, you have directed, over 200 shows?
No, not actually. I actually did a while ago. I actually counted them up. And Our Town is actually number 135 that I've directed.
Oh, okay.
I produced over 200.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So directing over 200, it's a slight exaggeration.
Yeah, well. they've all been. I mean, most of them have been joyous.
Most of them. Well, we won't talk about the ones that were.
Right.
But okay, so let's talk about Our Town, because that's the show that you've got going on now, and then we'll pull back the curtain a bit and go back a ways. But Our Town opened last Wednesday. We have our final performance at 2 p.m. today. A mostly young cast.
Yes.
Of UVA students.
Although Sean McCord is playing the town drunk.
I do get to play the town drunk. And thank you for that opportunity. and that's been great fun. And I think that's one of the great things about these shows, especially something the scope of Our Town, which has got, I mean, in the script, there's something like two dozen characters.
Yes.
Plus you've got some ensemble
people. 24, there are 24 in the cast.
Right.
Including four 11-year-old children.
Well, yes, I was going to say.
They aren't really children.
Right, and so you've cast it age appropriately. You actually have
young
children.
For the most part. I just felt it was really important. I think this play has so much to do with generations. And to have a second-year student playing, although we do have one second-year student playing one of the adults, but otherwise all the adults are played by adults.
Right, and that, you did something very clever in that. I noticed that you changed some of his dialogue, so instead of referring to, he refers to his wife in the play, he refers to his sister. So
right.
So you make it age-appropriate. So you have mostly UVA students, you have a handful of grade
very
school.
Good community actors,
mm-hmm.
and I mean that. I really... I just picked up the phone for the most part and
right.
asked people to do things, do specific roles, and I'm very pleased with the way this show has broken down in regards to the various ages. And we have some people who are quite a bit older, and then we have people who are middle-aged, and
mm-hmm.
then we have the young people, George and Emily, for instance, who
yeah.
are very age-specific.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's a lovely play. And I had heard that once you get on Bob Chapel's Rolodex of being a reliable actor, you can expect to get that call in the future.
Yeah, well, I used to do that. I have a computer list of about 800 actors that I've
wow.
worked with over my time. Who I I take them off the list when they die. So
so that's how you get off the list.
That or do something that I really have not appreciated. So I feel very fortunate, quite frankly, to have over all these years to have worked with so many wonderful people and talented people, and very happy to have that list.
The person who the person who's happy to have that list is Bob Chapel, former chair of UVA Drama, longtime professor at UVA, director. This is the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, 94.7 WPVC. Okay, so Bob, so let's go back a bit now and talk about your roots. Talk about what first drew you into theater. You grew up in Michigan.
I grew up in the northwest side of Detroit, Michigan.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And went to college at University of Michigan.
Correct.
And were you went to college from day one, knowing that you wanted to work in theater?
Pretty much. I mean, I was pretty sure I wanted to. I was in the very first month at the University of Michigan. I got into the very first play of that semester, that mm-hmm. scene, playing a very small role in The Miser. But it was like, oh, my goodness, I'm already on the Lydia Mendelsohn stage in Ann Arbor.
Nice.
But as one... As happens, I think, in a young person's life when you're not exactly sure what you want to do. By the time I was a sophomore, I wanted to go to law school and go into politics, and I kept getting drawn back to going to doing theater, and I actually got my BA in radio and television when they had radio and television, before they had it was a
what is this radio of which you speak?
Yeah, exactly. we had to do all kinds of different projects for radio and had to learn how to direct television programs and mm-hmm. what have you. But the more I kept going, I did summer stock theater each summer, and realized that my true love was really just doing theater, or I thought so. So I did my MA and my PhD in theater at U of M. I did all three degrees there.
So what drew you to that? I mean, were you a theater family? Was there a strong theater community?
My mom was an elementary school English teacher, and mm-hmm. my dad was an elementary school phys ed teacher. My mother, though, had a true love of the theater, and she used to, when she taught other places, she used to teach drama, and then we had this theater in Detroit called the Riviera, which the Detroit Red Wings played there in hockey, but they, oh no, that was Olympia Stadium.
They're a great theater troupe,
yeah, right? No, but they were in the same, they were probably a block away from each other,
right.
But the Riviera Theater brought in all the bus and truck. Pre-Broadway, Detroit at that point in the 50s was mm-hmm. a real pre-Broadway tryout city. So I saw Barbara Cook in her, as Marion the Librarian and
nice.
Robert Preston
nice.
Before when I was 11 years old as they were on their way to Broadway mm-hmm. in 50 or 56, 57.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Peter Palmer playing Little Abner in the original Little Abner
nice.
Came through. And they would always take me to those. So I pretty much fell in love. And I realized, they told me that the first record I ever bought wasn't just Winnie the Pooh or something like that, but it was the
Broadway cast soundtrack.
It was the cast of Oklahoma.
Nice.
So I pretty much fell in love with musical theater and theater, and I had a wonderful elementary school teacher named John Titus. I'll always remember him,
mm-hmm.
Who cast me as Tiny Tim in The Christmas Carol, and then he was also responsible to. Between the ages of 8 and 18, I would go down about once a month to a pretty major radio station in Detroit called WWJ, which is a 50,000 watt station. And they used to have a radio play program called Storyland. Stories old, stories new, stories make believe, and stories true.
Wow.
They would have kids from all over the city come in and play these different radio roles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I played quite a few. I did quite a few times. I would go downtown Detroit and do this for, we'd record it for, I think they were 15-minute little playlets. And I would do that for about an hour and get back on the bus and come back down to where I lived, and this was all kind of sponsored through the Detroit Public Schools. So I had done a bit of acting, and then when I went to high school, I got the lead in the senior play, and we couldn't be in a play until your senior year. You had the senior play, and then I played Will Parker in Oklahoma in the senior musical, and
look at that.
So from then on, I was pretty much destined to, you know, struggle.
Right, because you chose a life in the arts. Well, I'm so glad to hear about your background in radio, Bob. I'm an old radio fan. I grew up listening to I grew up in California, and there was a radio station that broadcast on the AM dial that I could only get at night. That played a lot of the old radio shows, and the first plays I ever wrote were for radio, and here we are back on the radio. In fact, I had an interesting discussion with a fellow cast member at Our Town the other day about how this play was written at sort of at the height of radio drama, and there, in many ways, it's kind of written to that audience because it's a very spare play, very economical,
and there's a storyteller.
And there's a storyteller who comes in and kind of guides the story along. And minimal sets. I mean, it really is kind of a play of the imagination. So it's interesting how that comes back to us. So was your original thought to be an actor? Did you know?
Yes. By the time I did my master's in right after I finished the BA, and then I taught high school for 3 years.
Where was that?
That was in Northville, Michigan, which was about 30 minutes away from Ann Arbor. And I taught high school. And I taught high school drama, actually, and that was the first time I had directed one act and as a graduate student, and had never directed before. But when I taught the high school drama, I directed 6 shows over those 3 years, and they were. I was fortunate to have some really lovely, very smart young actors, high school actors, and so I think I directed Diary of Anne Frank, Man Who Came to Dinner, Mame, Oliver, Anything Goes, and The Crucible were the 6 shows I directed over those 3 years. And I learned so much about directing just by doing that.
Sure,
and
of course.
Truly fell in love with directing. But then I still had, and then I went back for my PhD,
You told me that, but where did you go for your PhD again?
At Michigan. I did all 3 degrees there,
Michigan. Got it.
I was always somewhat torn between, you know, do I go out and really struggle out into the professional world as one has, you know, or do I work at a university and teach, because I always loved the university environment. So I finished the PhD, and I taught 1 year at the University of Alabama. I got my first job in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and there's still a number of those guys there are still my very good friends, but Tuscaloosa and I just didn't. From Ann Arbor. Yeah. It wasn't the right fit. So I left and went, and I thought this was the time that I could afford to really try the professional world.
So how old would you have been?
I will tell you, I was 30.
30, okay.
And because I'd finished the PhD when I was 29, and I taught that. So I moved to L.A., and I worked the next 8 years in Los Angeles. I worked first as an actor, and then I worked behind the scenes in production. And some of the time I made it a living, and some of the time I struggled like crazy. I did a couple... I was in a couple movies, and I was in a few TV programs, and I did quite a few commercials, but never anything of any real note.
Yeah.
And I felt like the writing was on the wall in terms of, and I also got to a place where I really didn't want to be controlled by having to worry that an agent, somebody else is running my life. So I said I was going to run my life. So I... So I got on the other side, and then I kind of got back into directing. I won the Drama Log Award for directing a play, Jean Genet's The Balcony, in at the Company of Angels in Los Angeles. And
when was that? Do you remember what year that was?
Oh, gee. It's got to be in the late 70s.
Late 70s,
yeah.
Okay.
So from there, I went up to San Francisco one weekend, just as a kind of get out of town, and I walked around Berkeley, mm-hmm. to the campus of Berkeley, mm-hmm. and I said to myself, why did I get a PhD in theater, and I'm doing what I'm doing? And 2 weeks later, I got out of the blue, I got a call. I mean, whether this was karma, what have you, I got a call from the dean of the School of Music at the University of Michigan saying, mm-hmm. would you come back and head the University of Michigan Musical Theater BFA program? And I thought, you know what? I really think I want to do that. And so I had 6 months before I was to start, and I moved back and put all my furniture at my parents in, right. Michigan, and I moved to New York. I said I'd never spent any time in New York. So I went to New York, and in that 6 months, I did The Muppets Take Manhattan. I got into that, I was actually cut out. We had these three scenes. I played a bum in Grand Central Station, living with the Muppets, uh-huh. and they cast five little short guys to live in the lockers with them, and we thought, oh, these scenes were for sure going to be in the movie.
Absolutely.
And of course, we went to the first screening where that Frank Oz and Jim Henson gave us the screening for the cast,
uh-huh.
and of course, we were waiting. Here we come. Here come the scenes. And there went the scenes.
Oh,
and there
boy.
Were no scenes.
Oh,
and
boy.
They came up afterwards and said, you know, we cut because of time. It was,
yeah.
you know, you ended up on the floor. So in any case, but I did a couple commercials. I did a play in New York, and I had a really lovely time. And then I went back and started I didn't start it. It had been going for a short while, but I took over the BFA program at Michigan, and I wrote to the head of a new program, MFA program at NYU Tisch,
mm-hmm.
saying that I was the new head, and this was an MFA program in composing and writing a musical theater, and I would love my students to work with their students, our students, actors, working on their students' new musicals. And I never heard back until one day I got a call from Dina Rosenberg, who was the chair.
Right.
And she said, I'd like to have breakfast with you. I'm here in Ann Arbor. And I went out for breakfast. And for one reason or another, within an hour, I was being offered the associate chair or coordinating director of the MFA program at Tisch School of the Arts. Our teachers in that program were Sheldon Harnick and Martin Charnin and Arthur Lawrence,
mm-hmm.
and all these tremendous Stephen Schwartz and, you know, who the composers and writers, the major ones. And I thought, I have to go do this. And so I left Michigan after a very short time and moved to New York, I was a good move for me, I think, in a lot of ways. And I met my wife there, mm-hmm. in New York, and did quite a bit of freelance directing while I was also working in the program.
Has this life lesson helped you because you've worked with, you know, generations of students now? Have you used this as an opportunity to tell them about, you know, making your own chances, creating.
Yeah, I think you have to be. I think you have to be proactive. Although I have to say this, I've always regretted, on one hand, leaving Michigan so soon. And I mean, Michigan. Brent Wagner took over Michigan, and it is truly, I believe, the best musical theater program.
It's one of the premier programs
in America. Yeah. And he has done it. He's done a splendid, amazing job. And I don't know whether I would have or not. You know. And so I do regret in a sense, not the fact that I left and he's done well, but the fact of leaving so quickly.
Yeah.
But I do think you have to kind of take the bull by the horn at some time and you know, carve your own path and make sure and not try to be a bit proactive in regards to you see an opportunity and you need to kind of grab it. Yeah. I think the business is such that I think you just kind of have to, without being a terrible person, one hopes.
So you're at the Tisch School. It's a very prestigious place. You're starting to get a name for yourself. When did the University of Virginia first come onto your radar?
It was actually... As I said, I was also being a freelance director, and the Theater Virginia, which was in the Art Museum in Richmond,
right,
for years, they were looking for a new artistic director, and I saw the ad, and I contacted them and said I would like to apply for that job, knowing nothing too much about it or what have you. But by this point, my wife and I had met my wife and we had gotten married.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I need to find, rather than just being freelance and needed to find something a little bit more permanent. And I really wanted to, if I could, find a artistic director's job. So I flew down to Richmond and interviewed, and they didn't hire me. They hired the fellow who was already the artistic director, but
sure,
they hadn't been having a search.
Sure.
But George Black, who was on the search committee at there, was a professor and was head of heritage at UVA, and I got a call about 3 months later saying, would you like to come down and direct The Diary of Anne Frank? And this was 1987.
87, right.
And so I came down and directed this one play and thinking, well, that's it. And I've had a great time. And I saw Charlottesville, Virginia, and went back to New York. And anyway, they called and said, we'd like to have you come back and do another two shows the next summer.
So next summer.
So one thing kind of led to another, and the third summer, I had taken a job as the head of the MFA program at San Diego State University, and Maria and I had moved to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back yet again. They asked me to do another summer, and I walked in, and they said, we're going to take you out to lunch. And they said, we've had this search, and I had come and talked to them about this, but had not gotten the job as chair or professor at a year earlier. And I said, I'm at San Diego State, and they said, so we now want you to be, because it didn't work out with the person that we made the offer to, and so would you come and be full professor and chair of the department?
Wow.
And which was pretty wonderful.
So and it was 19.
This was 19. It was 89, and I said, I'm not going to walk away from San Diego State like I did from Michigan.
Right.
So I went back for a year, and they agreed to do that. And so in 1990, I came and I became chair, professor, and managing director of the Heritage Theater. And George remained artistic director for the next 5 years with me being managing director, and then he left to become artistic director of Theater Virginia.
Very good.
And so I then took over as producing artistic, and that was in 1995. So I was for 21 years, the producing artistic director of Heritage.
Okay, take a water break.
Yep.
this is Sean McCord talking to Bob Chappell. Well, you know his biography now. Anyway, all the way up to 1990. This is the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC. Bob, I had promised you a break where we were going to be playing certain announcements, but they're not queued up. So we're just going to keep talking.
I've had my water.
Good. So have I. So now it's 1990. You're at the University of Virginia. You're directing here, and then 5 years later, you become the chair of the department.
No, I was chair right away.
Oh, excuse me, chair right away.
1990, but I became producing artistic director.
Producing artistic director.
Of Heritage in 1995, yeah.
Thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
So what was the... Now, I moved here in 91. Mm-hmm. What was the theater department like then?
Mm-hmm. Ironically, I mean, the theater department was really in good shape. Mm-hmm. When I got there, a couple people were on the. David Weiss was about ready to retire. David had been with the department for 37 years. He retired, I think, 2 years later in 92. But it was, I think, in very good shape. We had a very good, at that point, George was the head of the MFA directing program, and I think that was a very good time for that program, and he was very good at running that program. We turned out some good directors during that time, and of course, during that time, we had a young lady that she used to go up and down the hall, and I would say, swing and sway with Tina Fey, not knowing that Tina Fey was going to ever become Tina Fey.
Yeah.
But she was a really great person in our department and did everything. She worked in the costume shop and, you know, she wrote, of course, and then she was on a number of our shows, and she in 92 played my Sally Bowles in Cabaret. And we had a number of very talented, good kids. So I felt like I had walked into a very good situation in regards to the intelligence level of UVA students
right.
is exceptional, but also the talent. And so it has never been, I've never felt in my, this is my 26th year now, mm-hmm. and I've never, ever regretted, you know, being in this place or working with this level of students, and it's just been a fine time.
Well, I mean, not just that, but just the level, I mean, you bring up Tina Fey because she is perhaps her most famous graduate, and he was out there now, and everybody knows who she is. But I mean, you've worked with so many talented people coming through the program who are out there now, you know, making their mark in theater, you know, in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago and everywhere.
Yeah, we've had a number of very fine people that some are not necessarily household word mm-hmm. names, but they are regular working actors
right.
out there or directors or, you know, we have a young woman named Lyre de Bessonnet. She walked into my, I'll never forget this. She walked into my, office, way back to at least 93, 94. And, she walked in and she said, "Hi, my name is Lyre de Bessonnet. I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And, I'm going to major in drama and I'm going to change the world." And this is her second day as mm-hmm. a freshman, as first year.
Okay. So you hear that freshman, and that's how you make an impression
that's right.
on Bob Chapel.
Well, she also made an impression because she'd gotten 1575 out of 1600 on the SATs.
Okay.
She was an Eccles and Jefferson scholar. And she, to make a long story short, she is today the director of community outreach for the Public Theater Shakespeare Festival in New York City, and every year does a play using 200 people around all the boroughs of New York on the Delcourt Theater directing mm-hmm. a Shakespeare. She does this every fall, every September, after the summer Delcourt is over. And she's directed all over the world, and she has always worked on socio-political projects
mm-hmm.
and always in theater. She is an amazing woman and has had a great career. And you know, I consider her to be, you know, one of our true success stories. And there's a case. She has absolutely been a self-made person. From day one, she was always trying to do kind of break the envelope kinds of shows in the department.
Right.
So we've had, and then there are people, Sarah Drew has been on Grey's Anatomy for years, and we've had a number of young people. And then also from Heritage, I also think of Heritage kind of as my alumni also. Mm-hmm. And we've had people, I've got, you know, Jared Bradshaw met his wife on our stage.
Right.
And he right now is in Jersey Boys on Broadway, and she's in Wicked on Broadway.
Nice.
So we've had those kinds of stories as well, of people who've been very successful, who didn't necessarily go to UVA, but were Heritage alums as well.
And it's nice to be able to point out, you know, names and programs of people, you know, like Tina Fey or the Shakespeare program in New York, and point to the successes that you know, the people know about. But, you know, there have been hundreds of students who have come through your program who are now out there.
And doing very well in whatever they've ended up
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. They're either in theater or they're teaching or,
right.
I mean,
or they're in advertising or mm-hmm. they're in radio and television or they're, I mean, they're just, the theater teaches you to be a collaborative person and working as a team. It certainly helps you to being able to address people orally, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of good training, and that a lot of people, and you know, high school teachers, we've got people that are doing very well, and Lord knows we need them. So
and therefore impacting another generation,
right? Exactly,
go out there
and
do fine work.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you it was like a perfect segue there, Bob, because I want to talk a little bit about directing. Because you know, when people come to a show, unless you've been in a show, not only do you not know all the work that goes into putting a show on, but that's a deliberate choice. There's so much that happens in putting together a play that is invisible to the audience, and it might come to them subliminally. But they don't realize all the work that's... And I'm not just talking about all the actors that are on stage. But every time there is a set change, you know, every time there's a lighting change or a sound change, that's the director at work. Now, you're working collaboratively with the designers.
Yes.
But ultimately, that's your decision.
Yeah, ultimately, everything that happens on stage is the director's decision. But one would hope that one doesn't have to be saying to an actor with every line that they
speak. Yeah, don't just say that way, do it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. One doesn't have to do that. One hopes if you have good actors, same thing as if you have a good lighting designer or set designer. I mean, I'll use our town as an example that I think we've had a really lovely team.
Mm-hmm.
A few of the designers were students. Tom Bloom, who's been our chair and our head of set design for years, has given us a wonderful, beautiful set. And he and I have done a lot of shows together. And so we work, I think, really well together. And then Steve Sparrow, who is our lighting designer, this is the third show. He did two shows for me last summer. He's going to be graduating with his MFA in lighting design in the spring. And he's a really fine young lighting designer who is so flexible and easy to work with, but still comes up with really lovely ideas. A young lady, we call her MJ, who is our costume designer, has done a very nice job. And she's a graduate student as well. So it's a kind of a combination of people who are graduate students and people who are faculty, and as well as the you have to worry about you know, you have to cast the show, and you have to, and if you're running a theater, you got to pick the show,
right,
which is a huge deal for a producing artistic director. That I always thought that was the toughest thing I did, was coming up with a season that worked summer after summer after summer, because so much goes into it. Not only you don't just want to please the public, but you've got production values that you have to worry about because the budget is such.
Mm-hmm.
So some shows you can maybe do one really big show, and then all the rest you've got to find smaller cast shows or shows that don't have sets that are as elaborate as a big musical would have, and et cetera. And then of course you do have to worry about box office draw. And then are they castable? And if Heritage is a whole different thing, because I had kind of the the world to cast from.
Right.
Whereas the university, it's a much different thing. But then you have to, of course, stage the show and plan the show and plan the staging before you stage the show. And so there's tech that you have to go through and worry about that. So there's a lot to do it. It's fun. It actually is fun. Tech is one of my favorite times of all, and most people just hate tech.
Now, the person who's having fun with tech is Bob Chapel, the outgoing, just the soon-to-retire, long-time director, former head of the department, chair of the department at the UVA Drama. This is Sean McCord on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC. Let's go ahead and have your water. Let's talk about our town a little bit, only because I've been on the set and I've seen it from the beginning, so I think it gives us a good chance to paint a picture of what it takes. Now, everybody knows our town. I worked on a production in college. My parents worked on a production in high school. It's been around forever. And if you go to a high school production of our town, it might be lights on, characters enter on stage. They do the play. Lights off between scenes, but in a theater like the Kaplan Theater, in a place like UVA, you can do the same play, but you can add elements to it, elements that come in with the lighting, elements that come in with the set design. And our town itself is actually kind of a particular challenge because the way it's written, there are no sets. So there are no set pieces other than a couple of tables and some chairs and the infamous ladders that everybody associates with our town. So when you have, so you're not building an elaborate set with backgrounds that drop down and doors that open up. It's as part of the spirit of the play, you're keeping it very spare. So how do you approach that?
I've never seen a production of, I've seen quite a few productions of our town. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a production of our town that ever tried to have elaborate sets, because that's not what that play is really all about. Thornton Wilder wrote this play to make it truly theatrical in the minimalist way. And so that everything would focus on the actor and on the words, on the ideas of what is being said. And so there are no props either. And I've seen productions where they did use some more props. Mm-hmm. At one point, Mrs. Gibbs and Mrs. Webb string beans.
Right.
And I saw a very famous production in New York where sometimes they used props and sometimes they didn't. And they did use the beans. They strung the beans, But I decided that I was just going to try to keep it as pure as possible, that if Thornton Wilder walked in, that he'd be happy with that we were trying to adhere to what he wrote about, because he writes very specifically in the script, that everything is imaginary, down to the smallest prop. And we did allow handkerchiefs are used. Mm-hmm. and a gold watch appears once, Constable Warren uses a cane. Mm-hmm. And we of course use the relatively famous black umbrellas for the cemetery scene, which I think if you don't do that, it would really be kind of weird if people just stood there holding their hands.
Well, we were actually doing that during rehearsal, and it did look weird, especially since you had some people holding umbrellas and also holding flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
Had no idea which.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but for the rest of everything, including the horse, everything is imaginary. And I think that works very, very well. Am I answering this question?
Well, so when you sit down, and I'm just choosing this as an example, although obviously you have hundreds of examples you can choose from, but when you sit down with a designer, how do you begin that conversation?
I'll just tell you what Tom and I did. Tom and I actually, we sat down one day for a couple of hours, and he said to me, so show me where and how you think you're going to stage this play.
Mm-hmm.
And we went through the script scene by scene in terms of, and I started with saying, all right, I'm going to have the Gibbs house here and the Webb house here.
Right.
And I want the chairs in this order. And then once we get to where the ladders are, we try to figure out where do we place those. And as you know, we kept switching these ladders around just because of the sight lines within the
Kaplan Theater is a thrust theater.
Exactly.
You've got audiences sitting on around all, three sides
right,
of it.
Exactly, and which makes it a little harder for
it,
some, you know.
It
for
does. Can you put those ladders up and some people can't see?
And then we had these design meetings, and he would come in with these great ideas. And I said, you know, I just want just kind of impressionistic, nothing terribly realistic, but a sense. So he always has this beautiful fence, which mm-hmm. just kind of says we're in a civilized place.
Right. And the fence is in the back.
In the back, upstage. Right. And then he gave us these nice two windows, church windows, when we go to the wedding, mm-hmm. and then we see the congregational or the church, a church, which is presumably the congregational church, which is right behind the graveyard, which is Act 3. And it was all kind of impressionistic, mm-hmm. nothing over the top or elaborate, nothing ultra realistic for sure. Which I feel was right for this play.
And then there's that moon.
And then there's the moon. And the moon, we've seen pictures of other big moons. We have a beautiful big moon mm-hmm. that comes out at the end of Act One. And that, I think, says so much, you know, because they talk about the universe. And they talk about, I mean, Rebecca comes on and talks about, asks these big questions, which is very Thornton Wilder-ish,
right?
You know, so yeah.
And it's appropriate to the play, and that's what I want to get to. These are the subliminal things I was talking about. Like, you know, if you go into the Cobra Theater and you see a musical, and sometimes the set pieces are part of the show, you know. So you'll be, you know, in somebody's, you know, basement, and then a wall will drop down, and then suddenly they're on the streets of New York,
right.
And it's spectacular. Because there's this huge change, and the audience just gasps because it's a spectacle, and it's
right.
musical, and it's big, and it's part of the show, and you want that to be part of the experience. But here, it's very impressionistic. So in Act 3, when we're in the graveyard, and the windows roll away, and you roll in the background for the church, it's very subtle. It's not supposed to be a moment when the audience gasps and says, oh, now we're in church. You just want to give the impression and let people know where they are, but you don't want to interrupt the flow of
right.
what's going on with the play.
Right.
And what people may not realize is that, you know, this isn't lights on, lights off. There are, it's close to 100 light cues in this
mm-hmm,
show, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And all that is happening in the background, and all those, you know, all those decisions have to be made by you and your team, and there have to be people up there running them, and there are sound cues going on. And then there's working with actors. You know, in our town, you've got four kids that are, what, 11, 12 years old? They're
yep.
about
mm-hmm.
sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
You've got several UVA students, mm-hmm. mostly UVA students.
Mm-hmm.
Got people coming in from the community. Now, I've been watching you, Bob. And, you know, you'll turn and speak to a UVA student who's maybe doing something, gone off in a direction that you think is not right for the piece. And you'll be kind of sharp with them. And then you'll turn to, you know, an 11-year-old girl, and your voice changes.
Well, yes, I hope.
Your voice softens.
I don't want to terrify them.
No, of course not. Of course not. You know,
I don't. I try not to. I actually try not to hardly ever raise my voice with anybody if I can help it.
That actually is much more effective.
Yeah, well, I think so. Yeah, but, you know, these four young people who are playing, they're very lovely young kids
mm-hmm.
and trying very hard and very happy to be there, you know, so I would never.
No, of course not.
Yeah. Although I have to say, you know, I used to be, I think I'm a little bit more patient with young kids than I used to be in shows. People used to kind of laugh at when I did Oliver, for instance, and had all those kids and would lose my patience a little bit, you know.
And yet you've got to keep 1,000 details going on. I mean, I've directed shorts. I've worked with like two or three actors, right? And it's usually, it's like 10-minute plays. But you've worked with hundreds of plays. You've got these musicals. You've got all these elements going on. But I don't want to leave people with the impression that it's just like a big machine and you're up there pulling the levers, because you're right down there. You know, you're working with people. I've seen you pull people aside and just have a quiet little conversation, and then they go up on stage, and you can see a subtle shift in
one will hope a change is made.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to tell a personal story. You did that with me. There's a scene where my character, you mentioned he's the town drunk. There's a scene at the end of Act One where he just sort of stumbles on stage, encounters a couple of other characters. My character doesn't even have any dialogue. He just kind of looks at the characters and then kind of walks drunkenly off. And I was working that, with my scene partners. And what direction should I come in? And should I walk behind the ladder or should I walk in front of the ladder? And then you move the ladder. And how do we do it so we're not, don't all have our backs to the audience? And the final dress, we nailed it. We absolutely nailed it. I felt great about it. I said, we finally got it. And then I ran into you backstage, and you said, so that scene, you're kind of playing it for laughs. I said, yeah, what do you think? He said, yeah, don't do that. He said, that's not the character. People shouldn't be laughing at him. People, he's kind of a sad, he's one of the sad, tragic characters. And without giving any spoilers to the play, he kind of has a sad ending. I said, and that's what you want there. And I went, man, you know what? Bob's right. Bob's always right.
Bob's not always right, but I was right in this case.
You were right in this case. So I mentioned this to my wife. She came to see the show last night. And afterwards, she said to me, that scene was so powerful where you just walk across the stage and don't say anything. She said it was so sad and wasn't what I was going for, but you knew what needed to be done. And that's just a small detail. And you have to do that with every actor. You have to find, some of the actors are instinctual, but when you're out there on stage, when you're developing a character, there's what you feel as an actor, you feel you need to do, and then you're the director, you're the one who's standing out there looking at the performance and seeing how it fits in with everything else.
And to give credit back, is that the good actors put trust mm-hmm. in what you're saying, and they follow through. And sometimes they'll disagree, and a lot of times they'll just try it and see how this feels, because you never want to force an actor to usually to do something that they're terribly uncomfortable doing or think is wrong, they're right too. I mean, they're a lot of times, so that's where the collaboration comes in, I think, in a healthy way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's very much a collaborative thing. And that's what I love about theater. You know, when you go to see a show, if people come to see the final performance of Our Town tonight at 2 p.m. at UVA's Kaplan Theater, they're going to see a different show than the one we had last night.
Right.
And the one that we had the night before. I mean, we're all the same actors. We're hitting our same marks. The light cues are the same.
One will hope.
Yeah. Well, let's not even talk about people missing their cues, which, happens. But also just...
Not much, but...
Yeah, it happened. But also just because it's in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And theater is very ephemeral. Now, you worked a little bit in film.
Mm-hmm.
And then spent the bulk of your career in theater. Is that ephemeral nature of theater, is that something that appeals to you?
Oh, yes. I love being in rehearsal. I love mm-hmm. working with actors. I love the rehearsal process of change
mm-hmm.
And growth. And I love watching. I have to say, I love getting in and through opening night. And then I love to occasionally come back and see a show and see how it evolves.
Yeah.
And usually, it gets tighter. It usually gets a little better. Sometimes, as they say, you have to come back and take out the improvements.
Yeah.
But not very often, and normally I've been very blessed with working with actors who have asked me if they wanted to make a change as opposed mm-hmm. to just going ahead and making change,
right?
You know, but I would suspect, you know, if a person were working on Broadway and having directed a show, La Phantom of the Opera, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, that's been running for 20 years, 8 performances a week, that things have got to, you know, they've got to, and I'm sure they really are very strict about making sure things don't change very much with that. Even though actors, they say, you know, I've been doing this for so many years,
to right.
change, you know. So anyway,
well, it's a relationship, and this is something yeah. else that the audience may not fully appreciate. But there is a relationship between the audience and the actors on stage, and the actors right. really respond. So we had a Q&A after the show last night. And a couple of the actors talked about how there were moments that they didn't realize how the audience was going to react. Like, I didn't know this scene was funny, or I didn't know how sad this was until you get that input. And the kind of audience that you have can affect that performance. So like opening night, we had this, you know, I think there were probably a lot of friends, a lot of, you know, friends of the cast who were there in the audience. They were very enthusiastic, very effusive, very, you can feel the emotion in the room because it's a very emotional play. And we walked out of there going, wow, that was fantastic. And then the next night, it was a bit more muted.
Sure.
It was still a good audience,
yeah,
but it was a bit more muted. And people were backstage, they were going, well, what happened? Did I not do as good a job? And you know, if you're an experienced actor, you know that you did just as well a job as you
right.
did the night before. It's just the audience is going to react.
There was no difference, hardly any difference of our performances,
right? Right.
In those two nights,
right? Right. But just the audience yeah. just yeah. was less effusive, but they were yeah. clearly just as moved by it.
Yeah. I mean, I always say, play the play, don't play the audience.
Yes. Yes.
Which is very important.
It is important, but it's difficult because
yeah.
you get so used to. You know, we're not looking at the audience, and as characters, we're not supposed to be aware of the audience, mm-hmm. except in a couple mm-hmm. of times when we break the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But we're there, and we've you know, as an actor, you develop a relationship with the play, you develop a relationship with the character that you're portraying, and each night you go out and develop a different relationship with the audience. We only have a few minutes left. Let's talk. By gosh,
this has gone very fast.
It's gone very fast. Let's talk about your. You've talked about some of the people that have stood out to you, some of the productions that have stood out to you. What are some of the things that you are most proud of now that you're winding up your time on the faculty at UVA?
Well, you know, at the university, it was kind of my brainchild to do Arts Dollars.
Mm-hmm. And let's explain what that is.
Yeah, Arts Dollars is it's just simply a student fee program where all the students are charged. I think it's an extra, I don't know, $12 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that the way I set it up, this was way back in 1992. I created it and had to have the university approve it, of course,
sure.
and everything. But $4 automatically went to drama, $4 went to music, $2 went to art, and $2 went to the film festival. That's how it first started. And so we were handed at the beginning, I think it's now close to $100,000 every fall, but I think it was probably then about $70,000, $75,000 for our productions, to put on our productions. For that $4 or for that $12, students were given 60 arts dollars, which were put onto their ID cards. And they would swipe the ID cards and take off, let's say, one of our plays were like 6 arts dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, they could pretty much see a great deal of the arts, music, theater, dance, and they could go to the art museum and whatever for a very, very minimal cost. And so it was kind of a win-win for everybody. And that's still in place, and so I feel real good about that. I was chair of the 2020 Commission on the Fine and Performing Arts,
right?
Around the year 2000, and a lot of the changes that this commission advocated, suggested, have been done, and a lot of the buildings have been done. the Kaplan, for instance, is mm-hmm. We're very proud of having this new theater and having these three theaters now in the drama building. So new studio art building and even the parking garage. Right? that was a huge suggestion that mm-hmm. we needed to have a place for better parking. And so the university is really and hopefully the music program, the music department will move over to what's now known as the Arts Grounds, which was my suggestion of calling it the Arts Grounds, which is, I was always proud of that, too.
I remember having this discussion with you 12 years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah, it's been that long, right? Yeah, and just watching, watching this sort of centerpiece for arts grow in that part of the university has been fantastic.
And then just real quickly, my years with Heritage have been splendid. I've really enjoyed it. We've always been really in having problems financially just because we couldn't raise ticket prices that much and our costs kept going up and up and up. So we're always facing red ink. But as far as the level of production for Heritage, I would stake it against just about any other summer stock theater, summer theater around all over the Southeast, and we're told that. So we're very proud of that, and those were great years. And the people, as I said, reiterate the people that I've been able to work with out of those years have been some of my still great, great friends. So it's been a great ride, it really has.
In our last minute, what are your thoughts on retirement?
Continue to direct. As a matter of fact, got my first offer for next summer. So I'm going to kind of put my shingle out and say I'm a free person to come to come to your theater and direct plays, and we'll see what happens. So, and if I don't. I will. My wife and I are going to travel a lot, and I hope, and she hopes I know too. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to play some golf, a little bit more golf, and enjoy life too. But I want to continue to direct plays or musicals. I love being in the rehearsal room, and so if that can happen, that'll be my retirement work that one will hope will happen.
Well, Bob, the UVA drama scene has benefited so much from your presence here.
Well, thanks, Sean.
It has been a privilege being able to work with you on this show. And for those of you who are listening, come see.
And a privilege to work with you.
Oh, well, thank you, Bob. Come see Our Town, our final performance, and Bob's final show as a faculty member at UVA is Our Town. Our matinee today at 2 p.m. is our last show. Thank you so much for coming on to this show. And stay in touch. We want to hear what you're doing.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Bob.